before we go to the moon, I may as well take this moment to tell you that you're listening to episode 122 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. Coming to you May 8th, 2009, live on the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. Again, thanks to Free Radio Olympia, Boulder Free Radio, and Cascadia Public Radio for rebroadcasting the show.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
And thank you for listening. Obama orders review of NASA plan to return to the moon. From Reuters. The Obama administration has ordered a top-level review of the U.S. human spaceflight program that has been focused on returning astronauts to the moon by 2020. Former Lockheed Martin Chairman and Chief Executive Norm Augustine will head a blue ribbon panel. Ooh, that's the best kind of panel. Charged with assessing NASA's progress on a space transportation system to replace the retiring space shuttle fleet. Quote, clearly, if we're on the wrong path, we should change. But if you're asking me, do I think we're on the wrong path? The answer is no. Chris Scholes, NASA's acting administrator, said at a news conference to unveil the agency's $18.7 billion spending plan for the fiscal year beginning October 1st. This review, which is due by August, will focus on the U.S. Space Agency's Ares, A-R-E-S, rocket program and the Orion capsule that is being designed to ferry astronauts to the International Space Station as well as to the lunar surface. Here comes the big surprise. Prime contractors for the shuttle replacement program include Boeing, Alliant, Pratt & Whitney, United Technologies, and Lockheed. Again, big surprise, we just noted, former Lockheed Martin chairman and chief executive Norm Augustine will head this blue ribbon panel charged with assessing NASA's progress on the yada yada. The space shuttles are due to be retired by September 30th, 2010, after 8 more flights to assemble and outfit the space station and a final servicing mission to the Hubble Space Telescope that is scheduled for launch on Monday. The $3.2 billion budget request for space shuttle operations include funds for an added flight to carry the $1.5 billion Alpha Magnet Spectrometer Particle Physics Experiment to the station for installation and operation. Scholes said the review panel will also address extending NASA support of the space station beyond 2016 and possibly the Lunar Initiative. Woohoo! Going to the moon! Whereas I've been listening to some of the records from David Cross, where he notes, you know, try and tell a homeless guy that. No, sorry, we can't put a roof. We've got to put a guy on the moon. But we can't put a guy in an apartment. We've noted, again, for several weeks, as we see them prep us for events coming down the road, something in the cyberspace world, a cyberspace war, the power grid, perhaps, hack attacks, we don't know. But we do know that it seems like NASA is being rolled into the DOD and the White House. We've got the DOD basically putting the NSA now over cybersecurity. So it's cyberspace war, EU on off, net censorship, and free speech. We first note sarcastically from Beyond the Beyond, another blog on Wired. U.S. to radically improve its cybersecurity. Yep, you bet. And they're probably right. We don't protect from anything. We let it blow up in our face and then spend and waste a bunch of money for more controls from the people who failed in the first place. However, from Kurt Nemo, NRC study calls for covert cyber attacks against non-state enemies. That's the National Research Council pushing for the offensive use of cyber attacks against enemies, foreign and domestic. Quote, the current policy and legal framework regulating use of cyber attack by the United States is ill-formed, undeveloped, and highly uncertain. That's a quote from a press release posted on the National Academy's website. Again, quote, the U.S. could use cyber attacks either defensively in response to a cyber attack from another nation or offensively to support military missions or covert actions. I forget the specific case exactly, but we just hit it a week or two ago about the feds doing hack attacks on people. It's on the books. We know, again, from the information operations roadmap, they want to, quote, fight the net. It's an enemy weapons system, and it will be used against you. There's an interesting interview and audio clip from some of these NRC guys talking about using covert cyber attacks against non-state enemies. MI6 nixed a major undercover operation after they lost a USB device. We also noted, I believe, recently that they showed some classified documents walking down the street holding top secret documents and people photographed them. They were like, oh shit, it's not top secret anymore. They had to make the jump on some busts before people found out that the hammer was coming down. Are they incompetent? Yes. Is that always the reason? Absolutely not. Twitter breached again. This again from Threat Level. A French hacker has posted screenshots backing claims that he breached Twitter's administrative panel, threatening the security and integrity of high-profile accounts and exposing private info to the public, such as the account holder's email address, IP address, mobile phone number in some cases, and list of accounts blocked by the user. The screenshots, with a link for you, I've seen them, they exist, they are real. And they show internal settings and information for Twitter accounts belonging to Barack Obama, Ashton Kutcher, Lily Allen, Britney Spears. The info reveals that the Obama account has blocked more than 90 users from sending it messages. The screenshots also revealed a list of users who have been blacklisted by Twitter. Twitter confirmed the intrusion with a link to their blog and said that only 10 accounts had been compromised and that no information in the accounts had been altered. The battle for the internet is heating up. And of course, we see more and more questions being asked, like this one from Representative Anthony Weiner, a Democrat from the New York 9th District. Should we give Obama the on-off switch to the internet?
But you do want to have a situation where we acknowledge that this does represent a bona fide national security threat. And to whom do you give the authority to do what? You give the president the authority to have an on-off switch. I think you referred to this in your testimony. You give the president or the NSA or the Commerce Department the authority to go ahead and start experimenting with a second tier of the internet that says these are things that we're going to use only to plug in high threat or high vulnerability or important things like the electric grid or our military secrets or the like. And I think that one of the things that you four gentlemen have been helpful in shedding light on is that we really are going to have we're going to have more of these headlines.
And he pretty much mentions it all right there. A master switch. Top-down control of the web. He mentioned a tiered system. That's Internet 2, kids. That's, as we've explained many times in the past, think of it as a toll road. We're going to let the shitty old roads that you, you know, of course, paid for, we're going to let those fall apart, and we're going to force you onto new toll roads that you, of course, also paid for, but we'll hand those over to private international corporations, force you to use them. So they're going to let the old tubes fall apart from hack attacks, of course, that they'll let happen. And say, oh, we need more control. And then, of course, it'll tie in with the new homegrown radicalization, hate speech, cyberbullying, all that bullshit. And it'll be a tiered internet. Hopping across the pond, secret black box probe will monitor web activity. This from RINF.com. Spy chiefs are pressing ahead with secret plans to monitor all internet use and telephone calls in Britain, despite an announcement by Jackie Smith, the Home Secretary, of a ministerial climb-down over public surveillance. That means they're backing off. GCHQ, the government's eavesdropping center, is developing classified technology to intercept and monitor all emails, website visits, and social networking sessions in Britain. The agency will also be able to track telephone calls made over the internet, that's Skype spoofing, as well as all phone calls to landlines and mobiles. The £1 billion snooping project called Mastering the Internet, MTI. It's going to rely on thousands of black box probes being covertly inserted across online infrastructure. The secret top, or rather the top secret program, began to be implemented last year, but its existence has been inadvertently disclosed through a GCHQ job advertisement carried in the computer trade press. We also note something called Wolfram Alpha, an invention the Independent calls a catalyst that could change the internet forever. Again, we've heard many mentions of new internet, new amazing replicas, Internet 2. But if we jump to the EU Observer, EU wants an Internet G12 to govern cyberspace. The European Commission wants the US to dissolve all government links with the body that governs the Internet, replacing it with an international forum for discussing Internet governance and online security. The rules and decisions on Internet, key Internet governance issues, such as the creation of top-level domains, such as .com and .eu, and managing the Internet address system that ensures computers can connect to each other, are currently made by the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, ICANN, a private, not-for-profit corporation based in California, which operates under an agreement with the U.S. Department of Commerce. The decisions made by ICANN affect the way the Internet works around the world. Just another way we see America losing the stranglehold of its geostrategic imperatives. Or whatever it is Brzezinski says in the Grand Chessboard. Again from threat level, again a threat. Prison awaiting hostile bloggers, proposed congressional legislation would demand up to 2 years in prison for those whose electronic speech is meant to, quote, coerce, intimidate, harass, or cause substantial emotional distress to a person. Instead of prison, perhaps we should say gulag. The proposal by Democratic Representative Linda Sanchez out of L.A. would, of course, never pass First Amendment muster unless the U.S. Constitution was altered without us knowing. So Sanchez and the 14 other criminal lawmakers who signed on to the proposal are grandstanding to show the public that they care about the children and are opposed to cyberbullying. This measure, H.R. 1966, is labeled the Megan Meyer Cyberbullying Prevention Act. It's designed to target the behavior that led to last year's suicide of the 13-year-old Meyer. We've got the full links over to govtrack.us, and of course Thomas LOC, and more from Boing Boing and Volokh, VOLOKH.com, noting HR 1966. I believe he was the first. A couple of updates on the tightening. Rupert Murdoch says, internet will soon be over. Billionaire media mogul Rupert Murdoch gave a strange response when asked about plans for mainstream news websites to charge for content, declaring, quote, the current days of the internet will soon be over. He was making reference to the fact that the corporate media websites can't continue to survive under the current failing business model. The establishment media is dying, and advertising revenue has plummeted as people turn to blogs and the alternative media for their news in an environment of corporate lies and spin. And that's why you're here. Update 2. Now, first we had Twitter breached again. Now we've got a Facebook inadvertently gave a curious former Peace Corps volunteer and National Guardsman a slew of personal and likely private email addresses for other Facebook users, including six Google executives and board members and 61 reporters and editors at the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Mike Shepard, a 29-year-old from Holland, Michigan, who earned a master's in statistics in December and has no advanced computer training, sent a mass blast email to each of the Times and Journal reporters describing a Facebook programming glitch that made it possible, saying in an interview, quote, I wanted to make sure the press knew so Facebook could correct it. That's from the GadgetWise blog on New York Times. So yeah, Facebook randomly blasting out email addresses and content. Again, we note H.R. 1966, the cyberbullying bill, is not about protecting the kids. It's about shutting down the opposition. Dissent. From the Associated Press, Pentagon to create force for digital warfare. The U.S. military must reorganize its cyber operations and will use a new command at a Maryland Army facility to create a force for digital warfare. This said by the director of the National Security Agency, Lieutenant General Keith Alexander, the Pentagon's leading cyber warfare commander, and he said the U.S. is determined to lead the global effort to use computer technology to deter or defeat enemies while still protecting the public's constitute blah, blah, blah. So that's the main thing that we need to use computer technology for is killing people. An interesting one from IrishTimes.com, supposed lazy journalism exposed by online hoax. That's kind of an interesting one about a guy hoaxing something online and then turning it into his own grandstanding article about, see how lazy you all are? I'm a genius blogger. But we're not going to go there. The last note here on cyberspace war, EU on off, net censorship and hate speech. Authorities hunt hackers in breach of Virginia health data. The Washington Post, the FBI, and Virginia State Police are searching for hackers who demanded that the state pay them $10 million ransom by Thursday for the return of millions of personal pharmaceutical records that they stole from the state's prescription drug database. The hackers claim to have accessed 8 million patient records and 35 million prescriptions collected by the Prescription Monitoring Program. Quote, this was an intentional criminal act against the Commonwealth by somebody who was trying to harm others, said Governor Kane. There are breaches that happen by accident or glitches that you try and work out. It's difficult to foil every criminal that may want to do something against you. Although the hackers had threatened to sell the data if they did not receive the payment by Thursday, the deadline passed with no immediate sign that they've followed through. We'll make a brief note right here that they always sell you on these things as they're going to be more secure, even though we know they're all completely hackable. The RFID chips that are going to go in your passports or in your cards, or your ID cards for that matter, all completely clonable and hackable. And just like anything, the more that it's said that you can't do this and you won't be able to do this, that makes people want to do it. A nice little comment at the bottom of this post. Rob says that reading Media Monarchy is like drinking fine wine through a fire hose. But now we'll get offline and go to the bank. Study reveals the true extent of the old boys network between the government and the banks. This is from The Scotsman, their Scotland on Sunday. So this does center around the British elite. Because, of course, that's where the money happens. We've noted the three city-states. The District of Columbia, they've got the war power. The City of London, they've got the money power. And Vatican City, they've got the God power. Study reveals true extent of old boys network between government and banks. Links between government and the banking sector have been condemned in a new report that has uncovered the extent of the old boys network at the top of British public life. Britain has a greater culture of cronyism than Europe or the U.S., according to the study, which identified key individuals who have moved jobs between politics, financial institutions, and the bodies charged with regulating the banking industry. The report warns the close relations between business and politics lead to a conflict of interest at best and a suspension of critical faculties at worst. The study of 116 of the world's most successful companies will be presented to a global forum on public governance run by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, in Paris this week. The research looked at so-called revolving door connections, when a company employs former or current politicians, civil servants, or members of regulatory bodies, or where individuals move from the financial sector into politics, government, or regulatory bodies. The government and the political classes have very close links to the banking industry, said the report's author, David Miller, professor of sociology at Strathclyde University, who specializes in researching lobbying. I believe this could be one of the factors behind the disaster that has befallen the financial markets. There has not been enough regulation of these connections. The organizations with more than five revolving door connections were Royal Bank of Scotland, Lloyds, Barclays, Citigroup, Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank, Dexia, HSBC, JP Morgan Chase, Standard, and UBS. All the names you know and love. Banksters and the Gov. Which shifts us right in to the econocrash, shoplifting, outsourcing, and Obamavilles. First, a brief mention from the Washington Times. Shoplifting growing in poor economy. We will, of course, unfortunately, see much more of this. You'll even notice it's not those dirty poor people that do it either. However, from the AFP, China has canceled the U.S. credit card. China, wary of the troubled U.S. economy, has already, quote, canceled America's credit card by cutting down purchases of debt, a U.S. congressman said Thursday. China has the world's largest foreign reserves, believed to be mostly in dollars, along with around $800 billion in U.S. Treasury bonds, more than any other country. But Treasury Department data shows that investors in China have sharply curtailed their purchase of bonds in January and February. Representative Mark Kirk, a member of the House Appropriations Committee and co-chair of a group of lawmakers promoting relations with Beijing, and of course a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, said China had very legitimate concerns about its investments. We have another writer on the Financial Times saying, quote, a new order is emerging, and unfortunately, they ain't talking about the band. U.S. firms offshore 22,000 green jobs to India. Greenwash that, fool. From Raw Story, Obama and his green guru, Van Jones, have a green-collar job plan that they believe will solve the two biggest crises of our times. Of our time. One time. 5 million new green-collar jobs will directly stimulate the economy and will contribute to a more sustainable future in the face of coming climate change. Whew. I don't know how to battle through all the bullshit in that one sentence. But the 2009 Green Outsourcing Report, which you can download, the PDF, an annual industry study conducted by Brown Wilson Group, found that green technology jobs are being created faster in India than in the U.S. since Obama took office. The report, released 2 weeks ago, surveyed 4,000 businesses around the world, including Xerox, Accenture, IBM, CSC, Capgemini, Oracle, and on and on and on and on. We see the green job offshoring trend increasing. There are few suppliers who match credentials and outcomes of the Indian firms, said Doug Brown, co-author of the Green Outsourcing Report, to the New Indian Times. We, of course, note, very soon, my friends, the 58th Bilderberg meeting is going to be held in Greece, May 14th through the 17th, and we already know some of their agenda has leaked out by the hard work of folks like Jim Tucker, Daniel Estulin, Tony Gosling. Some of those guys recently interviewed by James Corbett. Their interviews are up on CorbettReport.com. Probably to be featured in the upcoming episode 85. But we know, of course, what their agenda is. Economic depression. About that loan. Yeah. Obama team writes off $7 billion taxpayer money to Chrysler. As part of the company's bankruptcy filing, Chrysler LLC will not repay U.S. taxpayers more than $7 billion it received as part of the company's bailout earlier this year. Instead, the U.S. will get an 8% ownership in a firm whose value continues to deteriorate by the day. This little detail was buried in the Chrysler's bankruptcy filings last week and overlooked until yesterday. A senior Obama official confirmed the news to CNN. Link, link, link. The Obama administration's Treasury Department has agreed to give up the $4 billion bridge loan extended by the Bush administration, a $300 million fee on the loan, and another $3.2 billion the Obama administration agreed to shell out last week. You ain't seeing that money again. It's all phony-ass zeros and ones from the not-federal Reserve anyway. And if you look it up, it's all fiat money. If you believe it's worth something, it's worth something. Web of Debt, the Inner Workings of the Monetary System, a long piece up on InfoWars. However, we return to the tent cities. This posting, we refer to them as Obamavilles. You could go, they're Bush towns. In 100 days, probably could have taken care of some homeless folks. But no, we take care of banksters. And we take care of our private military industrial contracting friends. Economic casualties pile into tent cities. This from USA Today. There is a video. And it's basically a long and sad story. And we've been there before. Whether it's in Sacramento, or now, in this case, in Pinellas Hope, Florida, or if it's the interesting Dignity Village in Oregon, you should check that out. However, we'll close out this Econocrash shoplifting, outsourcing, and Obamavilles posting with the always insightful and interesting author of The Shock Doctrine, Naomi Klein, notes, of course, that the poorest and most vulnerable are paying for these bailouts.
Well, I mean, it still feels like they're playing with the numbers, that they're trying to delay the moment of truth, and I think that that's why that confidence is really, really tentative. And there's still, I think that when we look at the bailout that started under Paulson and now is being continued under Geithner, you really see an absolutely seamless approach, you know, and it was bipartisan under Bush. It was, you know, the Democrats standing together with Republicans to sell the thing. And there hasn't really been a shift. And I think it really does fit the thesis of the shock doctrine because, in New Orleans, it was the public housing that was handed over to developers after the shock of the flooding of the city. Here we have just this transfer, this massive transfer of public wealth into private hands. And, you know, that's continuing. And it's much, much larger. It's just on a much larger scale than any of the investments in the public sphere that we're seeing through the stimulus package or the budget. I mean, it's $11.5 trillion to bail out the financial sector. And, it's less than $1 trillion to stimulate the economy, and a lot of that is tax cuts. Even if it is working, and I do think, even if we look at Bank of America and the response to the fact that they're short, $30-plus billion, it's just to play with the numbers. That's not the kind of thing that actually instills confidence. My real concern, it's been a concern from day one, is that the crisis on Wall Street created by deregulated capitalism is not actually being solved. It's being moved. A private sector crisis is being turned into a public sector crisis. So all of this mismanagement in the bailout, and even if it does work by propping up these banks,
it's still a budgetary...
Right, and so who pays for this? And, we've seen some of that in, I think, the scale of the stimulus package. It's smaller than it should be if we believe people like Paul Krugman. He thinks it needs to be three times as large. We've seen, and you've talked about this extensively on the show, why isn't there more public transit? So they're already cutting corners. And now we're seeing things like AIDS funding, in Africa be cut by $6.6 billion. So who's paying for this? And this is where I think the unfairness of it really becomes very clear, that, it is a bailout, but it's the very poorest and most vulnerable and weakest people in the world who are being asked to bail out the wealthiest and most powerful.
Naomi Klein on the bailouts. Shifting gears, but of course we've already mentioned internet freedoms, but still with a touch of the econo crash. And another case of the will they, won't they, flip the flop the. New York Times to file notice it will close the Boston Globe. In other news, we have freedom of the press declining worldwide. That's from Raw Story. However, from the Washington Post, the New York Times company said that it was notifying federal authorities of its plans to shut down the Boston Globe, raising the possibility that New England's most storied newspaper could cease to exist within weeks. After down-to-the-wire negotiations did not produce millions of dollars in union concessions, the Times company said that it will file a required 60-day notice on the planned shutdown under the Workers' Adjustment and Retraining Notification Law. WARN. We note, in a quote, from the moment the Times company purchased the Globe in 93, it has treated the New England's largest newspaper like a cheap whore, said former Boston Globe columnist Eileen McNamara in an op-ed for the Boston Herald. It pimped her out for profit during the booming 90s, then pillaged her when times got tough. It closed her foreign bureau and cheapened her coverage of everything from the fine arts to the hard sciences. The boy genius whose crack management skills have helped drive the parent company of two of journalism's most respected newspapers to the brink of bankruptcy. That's, of course, Arthur Sulzberger Jr. But then, of course, the flop. Globe shutdown averted for now, but still no deal with the Guild. Again, from the Washington Post, the New York Times company backed off its threat to file notice to close the Boston Globe, despite failing to reach an agreement with the Boston Newspaper Guild. The company says it reached agreements with six of the paper's seven unions, but that it's exploring alternatives, quote, under both the Guild contract and applicable law to achieve as quickly as possible the workplace flexibility and remaining cost savings we need to help put the Globe on a sound financial footing. So the fate of the Boston Globe remains to be seen. However, we have noted, Rocky Mountain News, Seattle Post-Intelligencer, another print media dying and going to online. And, of course, we just mentioned Rupert Murdoch saying the days of news for free will soon be over. Let's hop over to foodworldorder.com. The new joint from Media Monarchy, where we note recalls Rockefeller rainforests. First, Monsanto now suing Germany over the GMO food. That's, of course, Germany saying, Monsanto, you're out. Now Monsanto flipping the script, suing back, saying, no. Our genetically modified demon seeds will be worldwide. And the only thing that will save you is the Doomsday Seed Vault in Svalbard, Norway. Vioxx maker Merck and Company drew up a doctor hit list. That's from the Australian, of doctors who needed to be neutralized or discredited. Crisis gardens sprouting as Americans fear the future. FDA says alfalfa sprouts are now a source of salmonella outbreak. U.S. News and World Report and naturalnews.com both reporting on the alfalfa salmonella. A fascinating long article, Beyond Golden Rice, the Rockefeller Foundation's long-term agenda behind genetically modified food, which of course includes our good friends at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and all that yummy GM food and all those yummy vaccines. Is Prince Charles food destroying the rainforests? That's from Digital Journal, and Prince Charles goes viral to save the rainforest. That's from Time Magazine. They're basically talking about a neat little video he made. However, if you're aware of the eugenicist background of these elites, you'll note the irony of them mentioning Prince Charles going viral. Of course, Prince Philip says he wants to be reincarnated as a deadly disease so he can do something about overpopulation. However, from Digital Journal, by way of a news report on NBC6 out of South Florida, I have heard of this machine because I listen to the Alex Jones Show on Genesis Communications Network. Clean water appears out of thin air with Ecola Blue.
Here's a question for you. Where do you get your drinking water from? Imagine not having to buy bottles or even pay for tap water.
Well, in tonight's Going Green, Jeff Burnside shows you how you can now get water right from the air in your own home.
And he said it just makes water out of thin air.
Finding a machine that can do that is nothing short of incredible in these dry times. But as this Miami businessman has found, the technology to create it is incredibly simple.
The dehumidifier system is for many, many decades, actually. It's really the opportunity of using an old technology with a sophisticated filtration system.
EcoBlue 28 is the brainchild of Tillman's associate Wayne Ferreira, a professional South African tennis player who got fed up with the amount of plastic bottle consumption at tournaments. Everything about his machine is renewable. You can suck unlimited water out of the air, a relatively easy task, even in desert climates.
We have 62% of humidity. It is now condensing the water.
The water is run through these carbon filters, and then you can quench your thirst.
Ecola Blue, water from the atmosphere. Those machines, of course, will cost you a pretty penny. The last few notes here on Rockefeller recalls and rainforests. Gardasil linked to nerve disorder. Lithium in water curbs suicide. U.S. to recall diet pill hydroxycut. Parental Consent Act would stop involuntary mental screenings of kids. That's, of course, brought to you by the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul. Food firm recalls lead-contaminated lollipops. That's from MSNBC. And finally, our good friends, private military contractors involved in all the shady deals going on. Science Applications International, SAIC, awarded a $158 million contract from Defense Health Information Management System. The other fascinating story up on foodworldorder.com from CBS by way of a report from the American Association of Wine Economists, dog food tastes just like pate. If the recession gets worse, we may be eating dog food for dinner. Don't laugh, it's apparently tastier than you'd expect. Ha ha ha. In the last few years, organic dog food made with human-grade, free-range meat and fresh vegetables has spiked in popularity among health-conscious shoppers. Some companies even claim, for instance, that humans actually taste our foods as part of our process. What's surprising is that some of the new organic dog foods taste just as good as, or as bad as, similar human foods like liverwurst and duck liver mousse. This, according to a working paper circulated last Friday by the American Association of Wine Economists. The paper is titled, Can People Distinguish Pate from Dog Food? And it concluded that, well, they can't. You can download that PDF and check it out for yourself. We noted last June, and of course we've noted numerous times since then, that lots of artists are starting to speak out about the New World Order, whether it's the Federal Reserve or the shadow government or aspartame, or back in June, Beck singing a song of chemtrails. Now we have the artist, formerly known as Prince, on the Tavis Smiley Show talking about chemtrails and the lies we're told.
When I saw the State of the Black Union, Dick Gregory really moved me and a lot of my friends. I show it to everybody that comes over the house, especially white folks, because they need to hear that, you know, so that they know more about all of us, because what he said affects all of us. He said something that really hit home about this phenomena of chemtrails. And, you know, when I was a kid, I used to see these trails in the sky all the time. And, oh, that's cool. A jet just went over. And then you started to see a whole bunch of them. And next thing you know, everybody in your neighborhood was fighting and arguing, and you didn't know why. Okay? And you really didn't know why. I mean, everybody was fighting. So he started riffing about the chemtrails. And he started to say things that hit home so hard. And I would recommend that everybody try to get what he said online or wherever and try to get a copy of it and just listen to it. Because I was so moved that I had to write the song. The other thing is the first line of the song says I was born on the same plantation in the United States of the Red, White, and Blue. And we live in a place now that feels just about like a plantation. We're all indentured servants. You know, when I found out there were 8 presidents before George Washington, I wanted to smack somebody. You know, I wanted to know why I was taught otherwise. Just tell me the whole story. I'll fill in the blanks. But don't, you know, don't tell me something that you think I'm supposed to know.
We're indentured servants. Have you got a black president now?
Well, I don't vote. I have nothing to do with it. I got no dog in that race.
And those who would cuss me out and slap me in person if I didn't ask you why?
Well, the reason why is because I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and we've never voted. And that's not to say that I don't think Barack Obama, President Obama, is a very smart individual, and he seems like he means well. Prophecy is what we all have to go by now. It's very interesting. I did a sold-out concert in London. We played 21 nights in a row, and all concerts sold out. When I would watch television over there, and you see the United Nations feed, the direct feed from the United Nations, you'd hear them talk a lot about religion. You'd hear the Bible mentioned constantly. This is not what we're used to in the United States. It's almost as though there's no need for God and no need for religion and justice in politics. So there's supposed to be a separation of church and state over here. We can't have a separation of state and morality, though.
That's a fascinating clip of Prince on the Tavis Smiley Show talking about, among other things, chemtrails. Some of the clouds are not clouds. It also brings up religion and prophecy. And are we a Christian nation? And Obama being a prayer day, no show. And the idea, again, of the prep for what may come. Getting people ready for a new world religion. Now, whether that will come from some sort of Operation Blue Beam, fake rapture, PSYOP, War of the Worlds type event, I don't know. And you thought we'd get through this episode without catching the flu. Swine flu, week 2, in decline or incubating? It's a massive list of headlines of this strange new virus that's, of course, referenced by name in the television film The Stand, which I've been working my way through. As again, we mentioned last week, The Stand and The Happening right at your door. There's a video, again, of Ron Paul talking about the swine flu hoax. But we heard from Ron Paul last week on the swine flu. However, reading down the ugly list, swine flu hysteria spreads faster than the actual virus. That's from Paul Joseph Watson. Hawaii governor says the World Health Organization may go to level 6 this weekend, that being last weekend. We have not seen that yet that we are aware of. Company warned officials of flu 18 days before alert was issued. That's from the Miami Herald. Governments and Biowarfare, a brief history. That's from my man James Corbett at CorbettReport.com. Coral Cross, the world's first global flu pandemic alternate reality game. That's by way of Cryptogon, and I don't have time to fully go into it, but it was basically a sort of online drill about a pandemic. But right as they were about to launch the game, it, you know, went live. Increasingly good probing work from RussiaToday.com, now asking the question, are the drug companies responsible for the swine flu outbreak?
Meanwhile, a U.S. health official has said the new virus lacks the traits of the deadly Spanish flu, which killed millions from 1918. And with various governments working on a flu vaccine, theories have emerged that it was a plot orchestrated by pharmaceutical firms to cash in on people's fear. Swine flu infections are increasing by the day, but spreading just as fast as the virus are conspiracy theories. One is that the four-part strain was purposely engineered so vaccine companies could cash in. In New York City, many dismiss the media hysteria, but are not as quick to debunk theories for the outbreak.
That's the whole medical industry. It just seems that, like, they just give, oh, I don't get the flu shot. So I find that whenever I get the flu shot, I end up getting sick. If I don't get the flu shot, I don't get the flu. You know? Are there swine in New York City? Sure. I mean, the politicians.
According to Infowars.net, pharmaceutical U.S. company Baxter is working on a potential vaccine. Back in December, Baxter reportedly distributed vaccines to 18 countries. Those vaccines contaminated with the deadly live avian flu virus. The discovery came after the vaccine tested on ferrets in the Czech Republic killed the animals.
Maybe it's not malicious, maybe it's just to make a dime.
So you think there is business to be made from this?
Of course there's business to be made in anything.
Like face masks, for example, which are completely sold out at all New York City's drugstores. RT walked the streets of Manhattan for hours, and we did not see one person with these so-called pandemic protectors. Instead, amid the swine flu outbreaks, people are socializing and lunching in parks. Yes, the Big Apple may have the most U.S. cases of the H1N1 strain, but New Yorkers say the media is more panicked than the people.
CDC labs revealed as incapable of accurate count of H1N1 influenza infections and death. That's by way of naturalnews.com. We have a long clip, but now we've run out of time and I don't have time to play it, but it would have fit in right well with our occult media-influenced show today, Angels and Demons and the like. Killer Bird Flu in the TV series Millennium. Killer Bird Flu in Millennium, of course, from Chris Carter, the man who brought us the pilot episode of The Lone Gunman, run 6 months before 9/11, in which rogue elements within the military-industrial complex hijack commercial jets with remote control to crash them into the World Trade Center to kick off the clash of civilizations. Flight diverted to Boston after passenger complains of flu-like symptoms. That's another strange note swirling around Logan Airport. We recently had the Marine arrested trying to bring in bomb-making materials. We had the Israeli who caused a ruckus and they diverted the flight to Logan. Now we have a swine flu case, possibly. Don't panic yet, just stock up. Swine flu spread not sustained. Political lies and media disinfo regarding the swine flu pandemic. That's from Global Research. DailyNewscaster.com has a video of federal troops on Mexican streets stopping at major protests. And from Reuters, we've got Roche deploying rapid response stockpile of Tamiflu. Video and more from WCBSTV.com. Paranoia. New York City emergency rooms flooded with swine flu fears. Swine flu broke out of California, says the CDC. Rumsfeld's controversial links to drug companies and those behind Tamiflu. That's from the Daily Mail. We've got a timeline from Natural News, a world history of viral pandemics, 412 BC to 2009. CDC again saying the new virus does not have genes that made the 1918 flu so deadly. Area flu centers planned if needed, from nugget.ca. Lou Dobbs noting that it seems the North American Union and the Security and Prosperity Partnership takes priority over a flu pandemic. The Rand Corporation, Rockefeller, Dole, Dashiell, and flu drills, political intimations of an orchestrated influenza epidemic before the swine flu struck. Are quarantines the next step in the fight against swine flu? More from Wikinews, more from the Washington Times. The New York Times has Obama enlisting the cabinet to prepare for a flu pandemic. Prison Planet and Paul Joseph Watson asking if it's a race-specific bioweapon. Draconian power seen to contain swine flu. That's from the AFP. We've got a massive two-and-a-half-hour weekend special from Alex Jones last week exposing the H1N1 hoax. That playlist is embedded for you. Updates from May 4th. Again, a video now. Media hype causing the panic to spread faster than the actual virus itself. Flu tests find new type of victim. The World Health Org head Chan hits back at their critics. Obama promises to spend billions to address this bogus pandemic. Swine flu ancestor born on U.S. factory farms. Was the alarm justified? An interesting note from The Independent. The Bank of England ran secret flu pandemic disaster planning exercises. Tamiflu resistance of H1N1 strains. Swine flu scare, caution from the 76 vaccine. That's from the Denver Post. Much ado about the flu. No further outbreaks. New strain may edge out seasonal flu bugs and was probably released accidentally from a lab. That's from NPR, and that's a quote from a doctor on the swine flu. Probably released accidentally from a lab. Mexico says the flu epidemic over the worst. Inflatable mortuaries and express funerals planned for flu pandemic. That's from the Telegraph. We also have underreported real pandemics, not fake ones like avian and swine flu, where they, of course, note things like genocide and war. Flying pigs, Tamiflu, and factory farms, part two. That's from globalresearch.ca, and that's another great, well-sourced, well-written, documented piece from F. William Ingdahl, author of Seeds of Destruction. Swine flu, a hoax, but the martial law pandemic preparations are all too real. Swine flu may merge with other flu viruses, says the CDC. 402 suspected cases in Suarez County, Texas now. Fort Worth oilman, age 98, remembers the heavy toll of the 1918 flu. Time magazine asking if Mexicans are being singled out with aggressive measures as China detained people and are deporting them. With flu fizzling, health experts rethink school closures. However, Texas schools were closing this last week. That's from the Dallas Morning News. Chan, the head of the World Health Org, indicates that they might go to DEFCON 6. Swine flu cases worldwide top 1,000. The worst is yet to come in autumn. That's from the Telegraph. Fear-mongering from the corporate and the alternative media has been insane. That's from Lee Rogers at RogueGovernment.com. And Mexico to start China flu airlift. That's from the BBC, and that's, of course, what we just noted. Moving to updates from May 6th. Afghanistan's only pig quarantined in flu fear, and there's a funny photo to go along with that. First U.S. swine flu death, disinfo, dietary supplements, and swine flu. The CDC noting that a flu pandemic and the surrounding hype is good for globalism. You can see that clip for yourself. Pandemic, propaganda, and profit. Again, the guys from Global Research, Michelle Chosedowski and Stephen Lindman, asking where did this come from. The Washington Post has schools reopening after the scare. A fall vaccine campaign may include swine flu shots, you think? They're going to be on your kids this fall with a whole new list of yummy vaccines that there's, of course, no law that you have to take. Singapore slaps flu quarantine order with fine and jail. That's from Reuters. China says quarantine of Canadian students legal. Swine flu shows need for good public health systems. Is Google any help in tracking an epidemic? Schools told to set up quarantine rooms for pupils. Swine flu virus could quickly morph from mild to deadly. That's from the Los Angeles Times. Flu fears ease, but next wave looms. That's from MSNBC. Pfizer employee has swine flu. 7 new cases in Vancouver, BC. 7 new cases in North Carolina. 2 cases in Fairfield, Connecticut. Mexico's swine flu battle cry, remember Cinco de Mayo. Abe Foxman, I believe of the ADL, says that swine flu causes anti-Semitism. Flu hoax has globalists canceling a North American integration confab. And of course, again, we note they're going to add swine flu shots to the fall vaccine list. Corporate swine project significant profits for toxic flu vaccines. That's from Op-Ed News. U.S. halts pilot program in New York to detect bioterror. We noted that back in the news purge. Obama cutting that from the budget. Schools reopen with hand-washing, replacing widespread closures to fight swine flu. Baxter awaits testing of virus strains. U.S. public at risk from complacency. Precautions observed as Mexico City's restaurants reopen. And now the last several updates. This from yesterday, May 7th. New fast-evolving rabies virus found and spreading. That's from National Geographic. Facility to speed delivery of new TB vaccines opens near D.C. Drug companies must prepare for vaccine. U.S. reports 642 cases. Tracking diseased animals, a system in need of repair. Oh, we just need more control. Up to 2 billion people might get the swine flu as a decision on this vaccine looms. And finally, from justgetthere.us, hyped flu will make use of expiring Tamiflu stockpiles and allow for pre-pandemic priming of the population. Priming you up. I'm just about out of time, so I don't have time to mention anything else or play any more of the clips about swine flu week 2. However, we note that the first case of swine flu back in 1976 was found at Fort Dix. Do you wonder for a second why the first time we've seen this virus was on a military base? I'll leave you with that question. As we quickly wrap up, and note that 3 of the latest episodes of Clyde Lewis and the Ground Zero Lounge are posted up to MediaMonarchy.com. Toughening the Emotional Skin, A Pirate's Lie for Ye, and A King in Satan's Service. Those episodes, as well as Operation Bluebeam, are all posted up now on archive.org. I've got all the shows from April and all the shows of March posted up and linked up for you. They're all on one nice playlist. You can have 4-plus hours of Ground Zero Lounge from a man, Clyde Lewis. Still looking for the 200th episode of Outside the Box from, also from here in Portland, Oregon, Alex Ansari. As we flip back to Google News quickly, we note that California fires send 20,000 fleeing and burning 75-plus homes, and that there's a $15 million bail put on Stephen P. Morgan, the Wesleyan shooter. That's all the murder and mayhem and death and destruction and cyberspace wars that I can cram in episode 122 of Media Monarchy. Let's turn quickly to the list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. If you're new to this, I track my visits and keep a log of some of the interesting ones, where they came from and how they got there. First, Argyle Television out of New York. We had the Pratt Institute out of Brooklyn reading about documents revealing U.S. funding for the Chile coup. That, of course, would be the September 11th, 1973 coup of Allende installing Pinochet. Ford Motor Company out of Dearborn, Michigan. Morgan Stanley Googled swine flu, the stand. Boeing out of Seattle, we had the 754th Electronic Systems Group, HQ.AF.mil out of District Heights, Maryland, Google Air Force death, Jonathan Bayless. He, of course, the latest mysterious death surrounding Minot Air Force Base and perhaps the rogue nuclear B-52. Wells Fargo out of San Francisco Googled swine flu PSYOP operation. Again, the 754th Electronic Systems Group, this time out of Edenton, North Carolina. Homeland Security out of Springfield, they Googled, get this, U.S. Northcom mission analysis for Conplan 3407 Seaburn Prevent. The Tennessee Valley Authority, we're reading about the 500 million gallon spill of toxic sludge in Tennessee a few months ago. NBC Universal, NORAD releasing the motherload of 9/11 tapes. We had headquarters USAISC out of Arizona, Google William Bennett, USA Twins. I have seen something interesting popping up about the murder of William Bennett. Of course, the ex-CIA contractor and involved in bombings in Kosovo, murdered in Loudoun County on March 22nd. I see other stories and other research being done that keeps making references to twins, and I'm not sure what that means. Much like the Flight 3407, I haven't quite wrapped my head around, and how it perhaps ties into the swine flu. A lot of unsolved mysteries out there. Way more interesting than phony-ass fiction and bullshit American Idol media. Continuing, Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, they Googled Lemnois Pentagon Cyber Command. Booz Allen Hamilton, private military contractors out of Arlington, Googled National Level Exercise 2009. That's, of course, coming soon. Northrop Grumman, FEMA. United Airlines, we're reading about the 9/11 widow, an activist among 50 killed in New York plane crash. That's, of course, Beverly Eckert and the mysterious crash of Flight 3407. The Department of Veteran Affairs out of Long Beach. The New York office, New York State Office of the Attorney General out of Brooklyn, and also out of Brooklyn, and finally, Merrill Lynch and Company. Helping us bring an end to episode 122 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's May 8th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I am your tireless host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, doing it for you and a little bit for me, too. I hope it's half as exhilarating and educational for you as it is for me. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
write a diary, or whether he did not or not read it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.